afternoon, everyone. Today is Monday, March 20th, 2023, 3:30 p.m. I'd like to call the Senate Resource Committee to order today. I've already said the date, so forget that, Gary. You know what today is. Please turn off all cell phones. Co-Chair Geisel's present. Senator Dunbar's present. Senator Kaufman's present. Senator Kawasaki is here. He's present. Senators Klayman and Willikowski are joining us on the phone, and myself, Co-Chair Bishop. Thanks to our staff, Gary Cooperwriter and Amanda Kraft. Hello, Amanda. And today's agenda will be going over governor appointees, John Boyle, designee, Commissioner of Department of Natural Resources, Brett Huber and Greg Wilson, Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. And then last is Robert Doyle of the RCA. Then we'll be going over the first hearing of Senate Joint Resolution Number 8, National Park Service Hunting and Preserves, sponsored by the Senate Resource Committee. So first up, consideration of governor's appointees. Members in front of you, you have your resumes and applications for these members. For those that are listening from the public sector, these documents are available online. Pardon me, on basis. Plan today is to hear a statement from each appointee, have the committee members ask questions, and then move to public testimony. And will be the same process for all four appointees. So first up, Department of Natural Resources Commissioner Designee, Mr. John Boyle. Please come forward, sir. Put your name on the record, and the floor is yours. And I think we're trying to hold it to 3 or 4 minutes for our opening, but we have a lot of business today in the committee.
Well, thank you, Chair Bishop and members of the committee. I will try to keep my remarks eloquent in their brevity. My name is John Boyle. I'm the Commissioner Designee for the Department of Natural Resources. And it's a real honor, actually, to be sitting here today in this capacity. I'm a private person by nature, and so, you know, casting myself out there into the public limelight and all that entails is humbling and a little frightening, if I'm to be perfectly honest. But it's wonderful to be here. I'm actually really excited about the opportunities that exist here in the state. And a number of people have asked me, you know, why is it that you accepted this job? And, you know, I think it's a reasonable question. I had, you know, a comfortable job. I had a comfortable life. I think in a lot of ways I was just in a very comfortable place. And you get to a point in time where you start thinking, of course, about life and about things that are of greatest importance and of greatest value. And so for me, you know, it really comes down to my kids, my family. And, you know, I have two young children, and from their mother's side, they represent the fifth generation of Alaskans. And their great-great-grandmother on their mother's side worked here in Juneau as a waitress at the Capitol Cafe in the late 1880s, 1890s. And sometimes I think about that and I think, you know, what must have been going through her mind? You know, she was relatively new to the state, having come up from Washington. You know, you think of everything that was going on at the time. You know, Judge Wickersham was out breaking trail and dispensing justice in mining camps. And, you know, folks like Sidney Lawrence and Eustace Sigler were out painting our, you know, beautiful landscapes. Felix Pedro was there in Fairbanks, you know, getting ready to make a find and opening up his trading post. And you think about the promise, you know, that Alaska offered these people that were coming up and embarking for what they hoped, I think, to be a better life. And, you know, I reflect upon, you know, my own children, and I think to myself, you know, what will the next five generations look like? You know, what will life look like for their great-great-grandchildren? And, you know, my hope is that it looks every bit as bright and as promising as Alaska looked to, you know, those early pioneers that came up here to, you know, create new opportunities for themselves and what must have seemed such a faraway place. And I think, you know, a lot of us have kind of seen, at least over the past few decades, I think Alaska's lost a little sense of herself. You know, we've lost a little bit of that hope, lost a little bit of that glimmer. You know, we've sort of, in some ways, accepted a slow decline. And I think, you know, that's so contrary to the spirit or the ethos of Alaska. And so, you know, when people ask, well, why did you take this job? I think, you know, first and foremost, it's, you know, I hope to serve and I hope to help, you know, drive the kind of policy that will hopefully create that bright and promising future for my kids and for their children and hopefully their children's children and so on and so forth. Because I think Alaska has that promise. You know, on my way down, I was fortunate enough to have a window seat, and it was actually a beautiful sunny day across most of our state. And, you know, as you look out and you see the mountains that just go on endlessly, and you see the deep blue, the Pacific Ocean, and the verdant green of our coastal forests, I mean, it can't help but to strike you with some wonder and that sense of awe and how much the state has to offer. And I think Alaska's best days are ahead of it. I really believe that, you know, we have been endowed with an incredible amount of resources that can not only build a great and strong economy for our state, but I think are, you know, will play a key and pivotal role for our country in terms of national security, in terms of energy security, and in terms of kind of creating the kind of jobs and the kind of economy that will, you know, keep young, energetic, ambitious people here in the state, you know, that will continue to drive things forward. And so, you know, really what I think about is doing everything that I can with the levers that are at my disposal to help drive those policies that help create new jobs, help create new opportunities, and hopefully cast that glimmer back in the eyes of our young people so that they think to themselves, you know, this is the place that I want to start a family. This is the place where I want to start a career. This is the place that I want to work to make better. And so that's really, I guess, in a nutshell, what sort of has driven me to be willing to accept this call, is to do my part to help bring that realization about to the people in our state, because I think we need that, and I think hope is a good thing, and it's maybe one of the best things, and so I hope to play some small part in reestablishing that here in the state.
Thank you for the opening comments. Questions from committee members in the room? I have one. Since then we've got our Senator Wilikowski and Senator Klayman online, and I'll kick this off on questions. What's your top three accomplishments you'd like to see done under your tenure?
Can I say energy?
Works for me.
Okay. I happen to share the co-chair's vision. I think so much of the opportunity in our state hinges on developing sources of energy that are reliable, that are cheap, that are affordable, that will enable so many other opportunities to come to fruition. And I feel like cracking that energy nut, so to speak, is really the most consequential thing that we can do to get the state on a path of sustainability. I mean, as you all well know, there's plenty of people in the state that in the winter months are paying more to heat their homes, to, you know, power their homes than they are, you know, for their mortgage obligations. And that's just not sustainable. And, you know, we've already talked a little bit about, you know, Cook Inlet and some of the challenges that we see there. And I think, you know, Alaska really has to have a laser focus and plan on how we develop energy resources here in the state to not only make it abundant but affordable, so that we can, you know, we have that as a foundation upon which to build a stronger economy.
Thank you. Senator Kawasaki?
Thank you. Thank you for being here, Commissioner Designee. I had a question. The United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change just issued a report today or maybe yesterday regarding climate change and climate change adaptation and mitigation and things that we must do. I have a question first on the theory that they've laid out on anthropogenic climate change and whether you believe that to be true.
Senator Kawasaki, through the chair, not having had an opportunity to read that report, I don't know that I can vouch for all of its conclusions. What I can say is that I certainly acknowledge that climate change is occurring. I certainly acknowledge that humans and their industrial activities may play some part in exacerbating the rate at which we're seeing the climate change. My philosophy to that is really not so much to get lost in the hand wringing or anything like that, but it's really to focus on what levers we have within our control. And so that's part of the reason why, you know, I felt very passionate about advocating for the carbon bills that, you know, you guys have heard about quite a bit on our end. I feel very strongly about maintaining and upholding our, you know, robust permitting and regulatory environment to the state to ensure that when we do develop resources that it's done in a as ecologically as responsible a way as that can be done. And I think that, you know, when it comes to looking at energy and the potential for future energy in the state, it certainly behooves the state to look at all sources of energy, both carbon-based and non, so that we can, you know, think forward on how we can deliver better energy solutions for our state and hopefully do it in a way that is more environmentally or ecologically responsible.
Thank you, Senator Kaufman.
Thank you very much to the chair. Sorry, Commissioner Designee, well, maybe for just one last time, I'm hoping. So your resume is very interesting, and I think a very good resume with respect to this position. So you've got some federal experience, you've got some mining experience, you've got some borough municipal type experience, and now some state experience under your belt. And I guess earlier it was asked how what your top three would be, and I like those priorities that you set. But I'd just say your resume and the experience you have, how do you think it might enable you to achieve goals of oil in the pipe and the other good things that we have on the plate that we might be able to do? Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Kaufman, through the chair. Appreciate the question. I think this is a very humbling job. So I think I kind of struggle every day with thinking about the magnitude of what it is that we're asked to do at DNR and to think of the broad remit that we have. So I always have a harbor a little bit of inadequacy in my own heart in terms of how well prepared I am. I guess I look at it from the approach of, you know, I enjoy working with people, and I can't emphasize what a great team of people we have at DNR. I mean, we have experts. We have highly educated people that are passionate about their jobs, that are passionate about the state. And these are people that have all kinds of really awesome ideas on things that we can do, you know, to help, you know, fulfill our constitutional mandate in developing the state's resources. But I think also as we look forward to how we address, you know, some of these issues. So, you know, my strong suits, I think, is that, you know, I have a very open mind. I enjoy, you know, I guess maybe it's my lawyerly training or the opportunities that I've had to work in chambers with the judge. But, you know, there's a recognition that with any issue, there's always multiple perspectives. And so it's always really important to, you know, to keep a frame of mind where you allow those different perspectives come in, because I think it's in that process of digesting bits of information and different takes on things that one can really help formulate, you know, a better decision that's reflective of all sides, as opposed to just, you know, a narrative that might be more well suited for one side or the next. So I hope that it's, you know, my ability to kind of to listen, to bring people together, to work with people, to build relationships that can kind of help enable us to reach some of those policy objectives that we have.
Thank you. Senator Wilikowski or Senator Klayman, either one of you have any questions?
I don't have any questions, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Klayman here, I did have one question for the nominee.
Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you very much. So one of the things we often hear that we're kind of seeing Alaska's resource economy shift from being predominantly an oil economy to needing to be more than an oil economy. What's your vision in terms of, you know, what's a 10-year horizon, particularly from the DNR perspective, for Alaska moving into a more diversified economy? I certainly know I'm struck that with regard to the Willow Project, they're saying we may not see oil come out of that for 8 to 10 years, and so that really, I think, also sets the frame for what's your vision for a more diverse natural resources economy.
Yeah, thank you for that question, Senator Klayman, through the chair. You know, I think we as Alaskans can walk and chew gum at the same time. So I guess at least the way that I kind of look at things is that, you know, on the oil and gas front, we have incredible promise, actually. If you look at what's going on in the North Slope, really, you know, our optimism there is underpinned by the Nanushuk Formation. You know, that formation just continues to provide, you know, new kind of surprises to the upside. Is our geologists and, you know, as oil company exploration folks kind of take a look at that and start understanding more about the underlying resource base there. You know, there's an incredible amount of running room in those rocks for continued conventional oil development. So I see a lot of reason for optimism on that front. I think, you know, with what we're seeing on state land and the potential there, you know, again, I'm going to be one of the first DNR commissioners in some time to actually see production, you know, start to increase in the state, hopefully by the end of my term. And certainly I think for future DNR commissioners, you know, they'll get to sit here and preside over a state that is seeing increasing production, which I think is very exciting. You know, and there's obviously a lot more to come. There's, you know, very interesting research being done right now on methane hydrates that the state with the Department of Energy and a consortium of you know, experts from Japan are working on better understanding that resource. You know, with the right kind of technological advancements, I think, you know, you could see, you know, more opportunities for development of those types of resources. I am really cautiously optimistic about the future of the AKLNG project. I think I'm probably slated to talk a little bit about that on Wednesday, kind of reporting back on CERAWeek. But really, you know, there are reasons, I think, that should give us some hope. I think there are some rays of sunshine there that if the right set of conditions come together, we could actually see some real progress in that front, which I'm cautiously optimistic about. So, you know, I could see a future with an AKLNG project that in turn spurns more development in our mining districts that lie along the way, and ultimately could lead to Alaska becoming a major hydrogen and ammonia hub that in turn would, you know, help spur opportunities in clean energy, in growing agriculture in our state, and hopefully starting to provide more kind of value-added services as opposed to just being a net exporter of raw materials, but actually using our great resource endowment to create opportunities for manufacturing and other types of value-added jobs to grow and diversify our economy. You know, on the mineral side, I think, again, the state has incredible potential. We've got, you know, critical earths, we have, you know, rare earths, critical minerals that are foundational to supporting the energy transformation, to supporting, you know, national security interests, to to continuing to enable us to, you know, manufacture the types of gadgets and gizmos that, you know, all of us seem to really favor. Alaska obviously has been endowed with an incredible amount of mineral wealth that I think, again, if we crack the energy piece, which is a major cost factor in those developments, can move forward. I'm excited about agriculture. You know, the state, we have more freshwater resources than any other state in the lower 48. And as you look at what's going on, particularly in the Colorado River compact states, the tough decisions are going to have to be made there to manage water for those areas. You know, Alaska, with all of the abundant land that we have, with the abundant water that we have, the fact that climate change is, in fact, lengthening our growing seasons and providing more opportunities there for growing certain types of crops, I'm optimistic that Alaska could have a bright future in terms of, you know, not only growing more food to enhance our food security, but also, you know, producing agricultural products that can be turned into biofuels and other things of that nature. You know, timber, I think, you know, again, Alaska has more forested lands than anywhere else, and we are hamstrung in a way by current federal policy that wants to put most of the Tongass off limits. But I think we have a lot of opportunities to really maximize opportunities that lay ahead. You know, the areas in Southeast that have already been logged of old growth, you know, in the next 10, 20 years are going to have, you know, the next generation of growth. And that, you know, that's going to be a different lumber market than we currently have, but it will provide opportunities, I think, for people interested in developing that type of timber. I'm very optimistic that with our carbon offset proposals, that we'll see better and more enhanced management of interior forests, where we might actually start managing interior forests to improve the quality of the type of timber that we can get out of the interior and increase opportunities there. So I'm very optimistic about that. You know, I'm optimistic about carbon in general, both in terms of being able to monetize the state's empty pore space, but also utilizing that carbon resource, the CO2 resource for any number of, you know, industrial applications that are existing out there. And I mean, there's just all kinds of incredible new innovations that are occurring. You know, biological mining, where you know, people are developing bacteria that can eat through, you know, tailings waste of old mines and actually pull out the mineral content of those rocks, and that, you know, offer actually new ways that we could look at mining in the future that could be more environmentally responsible and pose less of an ecological risk in some instances. You know, there's just so many interesting innovations that are out there. And, you know, again, I think, you know, looking ahead for the next 10 years, I think, you know, Alaska solving that energy piece will be a major key to you know, preparing us for kind of what goes down the road. And I guess lastly, let me lead off with, I'm very bullish about geothermal opportunities in the state. What I'd really like to do is build a very deep bench within DNR that really can propel us forward in areas of geothermal. You know, we're already out doing surveying for areas in the state that are very conducive to wind energy and other things like that. I want us to continue to really focus on building that expertise in-house so that we can identify areas of the state that really offer a lot of opportunity when it comes to developing, you know, energy resources like wind, like geothermal, like solar, maybe tidal if we can get the technology there. But certainly, I guess, you know, thinking again for the next 10 years, you know, those are the sort of areas that I think present a lot of opportunity as we grow and start diversifying, you know, the types of industry that we see in the state.
Senator Dunbar, this last question, we got to keep going, but you're welcome to it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner Designee Boyle. And I was really struck by this incredibly long list of things that you are working on. I mean, DNR, as you said, is this sort of massive edifice with all of these different things. Recently, the governor split up one of our departments, the health department, into two, because it was clear that it was, at least clear to him, that it was too large. So in that very long list, you know, you didn't mention the Parks Department, the division, and I'm sure that's not because you don't love our parks and recreate in our parks, but other places like Colorado, as they've diversified our economy, have really sort of moved aggressively into the outdoor economy. And when I think about diversifying our economy, that's a big part. And so I guess my question to you is, would you support an independent Parks Department? You know, because you do have this large portfolio with minerals, oil, gas, geothermal, carbon, that all sort of makes sense. But it does seem like parks is sort of a different animal. And so would you support, or do you have any thoughts about turning parks into a separate department?
Yeah, Senator Dunbar, through the chair, that's a great question. And thank you for pointing parks out, because I certainly didn't mean to slight that incredible division that we have within our department. I agree with you. I think parks, you know, our state park system is really the crown jewel for the state. I mean, not only is it something that so many visitors to our state enjoy utilizing, but, you know, all of us, I think, as residents, you know, I live adjacent to Two Gap State Park. So, you know, hiking on those trails and those summits and all that kind of stuff, I mean, that's what enriches my life after hours when, you know, I have time to, you know, think and, you know, spend time with my loved ones and you know, our four-legged friend. And so, you know, do I think parks should be its own department? You know, I think that's a great question for the administration. I think, you know, within DNR, we love parks. There's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of overlap between, you know, managing our park resources with other natural resources in the state. So I guess I feel internally that, you know, parks is certainly not, in my view, viewed as the redheaded stepchild of DNR. I think, you know, I'm very supportive of efforts, and I know our parks division in particular is very supportive of efforts to look to continue to increase opportunities for access to our parks, particularly in Anchorage. I mean, we're, you know, anyone that's driven up to Flat Top lately, I think, understands, or any number of other trailheads understands the kind of congestion that we've seen. So we are focused on that, and I was remiss to not include that probably in my list of 10 things. Because we have our parks people have some really cool ideas on new, you know, infrastructure and equipment that we can add to really increase experience, you know, building our trail system up. I know the long trail is an issue that is very important to a number of people, and, you know, I would love to see more trail access, you know, provided in the state. So, I think, you know, we are certainly focused on furthering our park system, on improving that visitor experience, and, you know, we certainly enjoy being part, you know, having parks, you know, part of the family, I guess, at DNR.
Thank you. Brief at ease. No further questions. Just for the record, we know he loves parks because he just added 24 more new cabins to the capital budget. But being that as it may, I'm going to open public testimony now. So anybody in the room, and you can just hang right there if you want for a minute. Anybody in the room would like to testify? Anybody online that would like to testify on public testimony on Commissioner Designee John Boyle? Seeing none, public testimony for the commissioner is closed. Thank you, Commissioner Designee Boyle. Next up, we're going to have Mr. Brett Huber, Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. Please come on up and put yourself on the record, and yeah, and the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I'd like to begin by thanking both co-chairs and the committee for their time and attention this afternoon. I doubt that I will be as historically accurate or as eloquent as the gentleman before me, but I will try to share with you who I am and why I believe I fit in this position. For the record, my name is Brett Warner Huber, Sr., and I'm pleased to appear in committee today for your review and consideration of my appointment as Commissioner and Chairman of the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. By way of brief personal background, I was born in South Dakota. My family moved to Colorado, where I graduated high school and attended some college before moving to Alaska in 1984 with my wife and baby daughter. Like many, we hit the road north seeking our future and unparalleled opportunities, exactly the hope that Commissioner Designee Boyle spoke to. Alaska felt like home as soon as I crossed the border. I'm a father of three, blessed to have been a stepdad to four, and even more blessed by the many grandchildren in my life. I'm an avid outdoorsman, hunting, fishing, biking, camping, you name it. This state's been very good to me personally and professionally, and I have a deep love for Alaska and her people. Among my first jobs in Alaska was Anchorage branch manager for Alaska Tent and Tarp, where among my duties were the design and installation of geomembranes, pit liners. I got to put together pit liners on both the North Slope and the Kenai Peninsula. This on-the-pad, in-the-field contract work, while limited, provided my first actual close-up experience to the industry here. It was big, busy, highly organized, carefully maintained, and closely regulated. In a word, impressive. The lion's share of my experience with and understanding of the oil and gas industry came through my work right here in this building. I've been fortunate to be involved in the public policy arena since 1994, when I became a legislative staffer. In each legislative office which I served, resource, and specifically oil and gas policy, was in my portfolio. In addition to the understanding that I gained through my legislative duties, I advantaged myself of opportunities to participate in the legislative trips to various places on the North Slope, as well as the many training sessions and conferences relating to the industry sponsored by groups such as AOGA, RDC, and the Alliance. Between my two spans of service to the legislature, I ran a statewide nonprofit and was appointed during that time to the Exxon Valdez Oil Spill Trustee Council's Public Advisory Committee, where I became the chairman. Serving in this role and then following as EVO's program coordinator for the Department of Fish and Game provided me another important opportunity to gain another perspective. Following my second tour as legislative staff and his successful 2018 campaign, Governor Dunleavy asked me to serve as his senior policy advisor, where once again, oil and gas were an important component of my portfolio. This position allowed me to deepen my knowledge of Alaska's oil industry, as well as the chance to learn from and work cooperatively with my colleagues in other states. I first became aware of the work of AOGCC in the early 1990s with the unitization of Prudhoe Bay. I followed it over the years when legislative interest in the commission action warranted, and I followed the commission's work again closely as they deliberated and set a new gas offtake rate for the North Slope. I also had the advantage of meeting nearly every year with former AOGCC commissioners Forrester and Seamount as they made their visit to the legislature, and then working with them more closely in the governor's office as we consulted on IOGCC issues. What I learned from them intrigued me very much about the commission's work and their service to the public. When the governor asked me to serve on the commission, I was both humbled and excited for the opportunity. As you know, the AOGCC has an extremely important role in our state as the independent quasi-judicial agency tasked with regulating the oil and gas industry in Alaska. In my estimation, I've joined an agency with a long history of doing good and important work that's fully funded by the industry they regulate, that has a knowledgeable and dedicated staff, and excellent and highly experienced fellow commissioners who occupy the dedicated geologist and engineer seats. And perhaps most importantly, a mature and clear statutory underpinning for the work we do. The AOGCC has been around a long time, even before statehood, and legislatures have over time addressed those issues and provided a great statutory underpinning for our mission. My first day on the job was January 9th, a little over 2 months ago. I can tell you that while I've learned a bit about the technical downhole side of the business, there's still much more to learn, and I plan to do just that. That said, I realize I'm not an engineer or geologist, but I do consider myself a reasonably quick study, and frankly, the commission has those fields well covered. I believe as a public member, my responsibilities include asking a ton of questions, doing my homework, approaching issues fairly and impartially, listening carefully to our staff, my fellow commissioners, the public, and the operators, and then making sound and fair decisions on the merits of the issue presented while adhering to the statutory and regulatory guidance upon which our work is founded. Again, I can share with you that I'm excited to serve Alaska in this capacity. I get up every day happy to go to work and have jumped in with both feet. I like new challenges and I love to learn. Should the committee see fit to forward my nomination and the legislature confirm my appointment, I pledge my continued hard work, commitment, and a willingness to listen, learn, and lead to the best of my ability in the service of the people of Alaska with an eye toward future generations. Thank you for the opportunity to be here with you today. I'd be happy to answer questions at your convenience, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for those opening remarks. Senator Giesel.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this is not a question. What I wanted to do was make sure that all the members of the committee, I know many of us are experienced, but some are new to this. When we're appointing to the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, it's good to know what that commission does. So the statutes are clear. This is an independent quasi-judicial agency of the state of Alaska, composed of three commissioners appointed by the governor and confirmed by the legislature. In making appointments to the commission, the governor shall consider and give preference to a person who demonstrates experience in the oil and gas operations in the state. There are three commissioners, as I said. Those qualifications are one member shall be a petroleum engineer. I won't read the whole thing about the university degree, the field of engineering, 10 years experience, etc. The second person shall be a geologist who, again, holds certification as a professional geologist with a minimum of 10 years professional experience. And then the third member shall have training or experience that gives a person a fundamental understanding of the oil and gas industry in the state. That's a pretty new piece of the statute, because the legislature wanted to be sure that it wasn't just a random public member, which we had at one point, and so it's someone with knowledge and some evidence of experience. So just wanted to offer that as a preface, Mr. Chairman, as we consider appointments. Thank you.
Thanks for the updates. Senator Dunbar, you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I see a question for the co-chair and then a question for Mr. Huber. When did that change go into effect, the additional requirements on the public member?
In 2006.
2006, okay.
I won't name the reason, but that's okay.
Well, that's what I'm getting at. So, I mean, it might be offline, but I don't understand how and why that came about and what the legislative intent was with that language. I think that's important, and I'll talk to you about that offline. But because we are talking about qualifications.
Yes.
That's a question for Mr. Huber. So you have a quite detailed and varied resume here, but there is a gap. I just wanted to ask you about it. From 2005 to 2012, can you sort of lay out what you were doing during that time, what your employment was?
Absolutely. Thank you for the question, Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Dunbar. Short answer is Maui. So when I put my resume together, I started working when I was very young, and I've done a lot of things throughout my life and throughout my career. So when I put my resume together for this opportunity, I did it in something that I felt was instructive of my relationship and background with the industry. But actually in 2005, I was not able to retire yet, but I had some things that I wanted to do in a warm climate, which I never lived. So we went to Maui not knowing what the duration of that stay would be. I was there 7 years. I was a dive instructor, a dive boat captain. I managed a gym. My wife was a property manager. It was an installment on retirement that we couldn't take, but wanted to do at that time in our life, sir.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any Senator Wilikowski or Senator Klayman, any questions from Sitka? I guess not. They got weathered in.
No questions for Klayman.
Thank you.
Senator Wilikowski for me.
Okay. All right. Seeing no further questions, Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks for meeting me earlier this morning. We did have a little bit of a comment regarding your work employment between 2012 January until May of 2022 in state service. You were in state service that entire period of time without any lapses.
Sorry.
Were you, through the chair, employed, according to this resume, between January 2012 until May of 17, and then once again December of 2018 until May of 2022. Are those the correct dates?
Through the chair, I believe that those dates are correct. There might have been lapses as portion of that service was legislative service. So I did move between legislative offices, which might have made a small break in service, sir. I was employed through 2020. I left the state service in April of 2022 and then returned to state service with this appointment.
And what was the date of that service that this began?
I began on January 9th. I was appointed and had my first day on January 9th.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And then a second question. We talked about this again this morning relating to an APOC complaint that was filed both one in the 2020 election cycle and one again in this 2022 election cycle. Can you just give us the background of the 2022 cycle, and then I'll have another question on that.
Yes, sir. I'll do my best. And through the chair, thank you for our conversation earlier today. Let me do a little bit of thinking on dates and times. So in May 1st, I began as a consultant to a group called A Stronger Alaska, supporting the governor's campaign. The preceding October, I had become a deputy treasurer for the Dunleavy campaign. We had a specific dinner, and I was one available to cover it. So to make sure that we were following all of the rules, even for a dinner, I asked them to add me as deputy treasurer. They did. After that, I'd asked them to remove me as deputy treasurer, and I thought that they had. Unbeknownst to me, that hadn't happened. They testified at the APOC hearing that that was a clerical error, but nonetheless, on May 1st, I was both listed as a deputy treasurer at APOC and under contract with another group. So they did grant an expedited hearing. I provided all information. I testified for, I think, 2 hours and answered all of the questions. I satisfied all of APOC's inquiries. The commission following that hearing found that there was no additional evidence of coordination, but there is still an ongoing hearing. It does after that hearing and presenting there, I was told by the commission that I'd satisfied everything they needed from me, that my explanation had merit, that it was supported by other explanations, but they still had ongoing issues with other parties to the complaint. So, and I quite honestly cannot tell you, Mr. Chairman, Senator Kawasaki, where that current action is, because after I was basically dismissed from any additional activity with APOC, I quit following.
Thank you.
You had a follow-up?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. There was an earlier complaint in the 2020 cycle regarding ballot measure 2. Under ballot measure 2, the initiative that was ballot measure 2, I guess the question is, were you employed by the state during that time, which coincides with the resume that we have before us, or were you on leave or some other were you on some other situation other than permanent full-time employment?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kawasaki, if that's what my dates read, then that is a mistake on my part. No, I was not in state service while I worked on the campaign opposing ballot measure 2. I'd actually separated from the state, so there was no – it's possible to work for the state and be involved in those political functions, but it's difficult. And I think it shows a perception of conflict, if not conflict. So I left my role in the state, did that full time, returned to state service following that campaign. Great.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Mr. Huber, I had read parts of the statute earlier, and it's in Title 31, Chapter 5, the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. The specific statute related to the qualifications is AS 3105009, number 3. One member shall have training or experience that gives the person a fundamental understanding of the oil and gas industry in the state. As I read your resume, I, of course, for the public, they may not know that you are applying for this public seat. You're not a petroleum engineer. You're not a geologist, the other two seats. But as I read your resume, there's a lot here about managerial, communication, analytics skills. I don't see a lot here that talks about your fundamental understanding of the oil and gas industry in the state. Perhaps you could talk about that a little bit.
Madam Co-Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, thank you for the question. Yes, for example, the 4 years that I spent from 96 through 2000 working for the legislature was working for Senator Rick Halford, and I was staff to the Senate Resources Committee. Oil and gas issues, resource issues were very much at the forefront then, just like they've been virtually every legislative session after that. So that really gave me, I think, a lot of exposure to what the oil industry does, the policy side of the oil industry, how the oil industry operates, how important it is to the Alaska, how the federal and state jurisdictions overlap, basically how the industry worked. And then I was super intrigued when I first went to the slope. Like I said, it was impressive. So as I'm intrigued by something, I try to dive in. So that's why, in addition to just the legislative work, I tried to make sure that I was available for conferences, for technical sessions. During my tenure as chief of staff for Senator McGuire was when you and she and Senator, were really the lead on moving that bill forward, and I worked very closely on that, again, exposing to how the industry works. So I have, and been in Alaska since 1984, so many friends and colleagues in the industry. I don't have a resume of a lot of time in the field, but certainly have done, I believe, a lot of work, a lot of effort, and a lot of policy things relating around to the oil industry that provide that fundamental understanding.
Thank you for elaborating on that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
No further questions. I'm going to open up public testimony. Public testimony is open. Is anybody in the room wishing to testify? Seeing none, doesn't appear anybody is. Robin O'Donohue, Alaska Public Interest Research Question. Research Group, excuse me. You would like to testify?
Yes, good afternoon, Chair Bishop.
Yes, I can. 2 minutes, please.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Senators. My name is Robin O'Donohue. I'm calling in from Anchorage today on behalf of the Alaska Public Interest Research Group, or ACPIRG. We believe that Brett Huber has not conducted himself in a manner that recommends him to serve as the chair of the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, an entity whose mission explicitly requires the protection of the public interest. AOGCC members must rise above politics to uphold the Constitution. We need someone leading the AOGCC who represents the public and displays stability and trustworthiness. ACPIRG does not believe Mr. Huber's professional record reflects these important qualities. The Alaska Public Offices Commission, or APOC, has examined Mr. Huber's conduct, where he misled APOC while under oath with respect to ballot measure 2 issues. Mr. Huber's resume does not accurately reflect his actual employment history. In the resume submitted to the legislature, he has admitted several political campaigns between 2018 to 2022, while he quite publicly left state service after news coverage to the public objection to the governor's office awarding him no-bid contracts while he was also working on Governor Dunleavy's re-election campaign. Mr. Huber has been less than honest while representing his work experience to the Alaska legislature throughout this process, and for all intents and purposes, he has been serving the individual political needs of Mike Dunleavy rather than the needs of the governor or state of Alaska. Please do not vote to confirm Brett Huber to the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, and we will be following up through written testimony for the committee to review. Thank you for your time and service to the state of Alaska.
Thank you for calling in. Seeing no further public testimony online or in the room, public testimony on this, Mr. Brett Huber is now closed. We're now going to go. Thank you for your testimony today. Next,
thank
we're going to go to
Chair.
Mr. Thank you, Greg Wilson, Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. Mr. Wilson.
Hello, and good afternoon, Co-Chair Kiesel and Bishop, Vice Chair Wilkowski, and members of the Senate Resource Committee. Sorry I couldn't be there in person today. I do want to say that most of what I'm hearing is barely audible, especially from the senators. The witness call-in was louder, but I can hear, but I have to lean in close. So thank you for making time for my confirmation hearing today. For the record, my name is Gregory C. Wilson, and in the next few minutes, I'll tell you about me and why the role of geology commissioner at the ALGCC is a good fit with my experience, but even more importantly, you know, why it will serve the people of Alaska well. I did finish the remainder of Dan Seamount's term beginning September of last year and have now been reappointed to my own term. I've really enjoyed working with Commissioner Chmielowski these past months and now with Chairman Huber, but I especially want to compliment the dedication and experience of the staff at the AOGCC. I can only hope to one day earn the same respect from them that I already have for them. So for myself, I have a PhD in geology from the University of Wisconsin and over 31 years of experience as a petroleum geologist and manager with ARCO, Ben Phillips, and ConocoPhillips here in Alaska. I've seen a broad array of the industry in Alaska. And while my career has been in private industry, public service has always been important to me. I've served on the State Mapping Board with the Alaska Division of Geological and Geophysical Surveys. I've served as president of the Alaska Geological Society, was the monthly newsletter editor for the Alaska Geological Society for many years. I've been adjunct faculty at APU, and I've organized several large geologic multi-state conventions in Alaska. Serving as geology commissioner is a way for me to translate the skills and experiences I've built over a career to an opportunity to serve all the people of Alaska in an impactful way. The role is of critical importance to the issues of public safety, environment, conservation of resource, revenue, and now even climate with the CCUS bills. So how did I get here? In May of 2021, I was excited about an early retirement full of boating, fishing, and skiing, kind of the typical Alaskan sorts of things. I've got a couple of places down on the Kenai Peninsula. But then that year, I was humbled to be the recipient of the Marilyn Crockett Lifetime Achievement Award by the Alaska Oil and Gas Association, or AOGA. I have to believe the attention that the award generated was partly responsible for inquiries I later received asking if I would be interested in Dan Seamount's position at ALGCC as he was seeking retirement. So what experience do I bring to this role? The first half of my career was as an individual contributor. I started that career working in the Kuparik field development and then exploration and delineation of the Alpine field. It was the discovery of Alpine that in part led to the 1999 reoffering of the NPRA for leasing after a decades-long hiatus. I was a project geologist for a small ARCO team that was successful in bidding on leases that form much of the core of what ConocoPhillips is developing to this day in the NPRA. I was project geologist for the subsequent NPRA drilling and the data integration in early 2000s, so I spent a lot of time at remote drill sites and also planning the next year's drilling, where we wanted to go next. That included the Lookout Discovery, which is now GMT-1, and the Rendezvous Discovery, which is now GMT-2. Also, during this time, I identified and named the Willow Prospect and drilled this discovery well way back in 2002. So it kind of tells you how long some things take here in Alaska. Before I moved on to management, I was also the project geologist for ConocoPhillips' plans to drill in the Chukchi Sea and was editor of a comprehensive work on the geology of the Chukchi Sea. I've prospected for reservoir objectives in everything from the Endicott Formation, the oldest reservoir on the North Slope, to the youngest Brookian rocks, giving me a familiarity with virtually every field on the North Slope. At the same time, I was conducting summer field programs in the Brooks Range, becoming a regional expert on the outcrop geology of the Brooks Range and the North Slope. During this time, I visited all the native villages, interacted with state and federal agencies, and became intimately familiar with the operations on the North Slope. And it was because of this that my employers, ArcoPhillips and ConocoPhillips, entrusted me as a guide on numerous VIP visits to the North Slope, including some where I was a sole company representative. I even had federal agencies request me specifically to accompany them. From there, I moved into management, first directing the team that explored for the new fields, and then as an operations and technology manager. In this role, I not only managed a team of experts in petrophysics, seismic acquisition, seismic processing, reservoir engineering, but also had responsibility over exploration operations, everything from environmental studies to permitting ice roads, ice road constructions, drilling, site remediation. And it was at this time I had the luck of managing the delineation of the Willow Field that I had identified so many years prior. I also managed the acquisition of the first compressive seismic imaging in Alaska and onshore U.S. for that matter. It was followed by five more such surveys. The seismic projects received awards for innovation, safety, and environmental stewardship. During the time as operations manager, I interacted with the AOGCC, with the DNR, the BLM, the DEC, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, and the North Slope Borough. I do see, you know, challenges on the horizon here. I fully expect challenges in the coming year at AOGCC. The landscape of the operators is evolving. Technology is evolving. The AOGCC is taking on new roles of carbon capture legislation. But all this makes the AOGCC a very exciting and impactful agency to be a part of, and I'm hoping to be a part of that. If Willow and Pickham move forward, you know, Alaska has its chance for a bridge to whatever comes next. We have to use this time wisely, and I want to be a part of that. So I thank you for your time and consideration, and would be pleased to entertain questions.
Thank
you. Once again, I'm having a little trouble hearing what's coming through the microphone.
Can you hear this?
I certainly can.
Okay. Thank you for your opening comments. Resume's impeccable. And I have no questions. Committee members, Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you, Mr. Wilson, for being online today. I had a question regarding the Alpine gas leak from last March, and whether you, I think that you may have been already on the AOGCC at that point in time. Is that correct?
No, that's not at the time of the leak. The hearing has not yet happened. I came on board replacing Dan Seamount September 19th of 2022. That was one of the things that was definitely on my radar screen. I sought an opinion. There was no chair here at the time. I sought an opinion of the Attorney General. And at present, I am accusing myself from that hearing.
Okay, thanks. That was mostly my question. I guess just a second, just a follow-up question there.
Follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question would be just for in that particular circumstance, you were working for Conoco and then switched over. In the future, if ConocoPhillips or if any of the other producers had a leak similar to that, would you recuse yourself, or would you just? I guess you probably wouldn't need to recuse yourself.
So the guidance that I've been given, first, you know, one of the qualifications for this position is that you have a minimum of 10 years professional experience in the field of petroleum geology, and so a number of professionals here do have prior experience in industry here in Alaska or otherwise, and so that by itself doesn't disqualify anyone from participating in such hearings. Mine went to quite a bit of deliberation, I guess, over whether or not I should participate and, you know, what were the issues with my participation or recusing myself. And the reality is the guidance wasn't that because I had a career with ConocoPhillips, but I had divested of most of my ConocoPhillips stock, but not all of my ConocoPhillips stock. And the fact that somebody who owned what the public might consider a significant portion of ConocoPhillips stock could be perceived as a conflict of interest and maybe impartiality. And that couldn't be remedied by either selling it or hanging on to it. By selling it, it could, you know, be perceived that I had some kind of insider information and wanted to sell the stock ahead of the hearing. By keeping it, a perception of impartiality. And so the wise course was to recuse myself.
Thank you very much, Commissioner.
Thank you. No further questions from the room. Senator Wilikowski, any questions?
No questions.
Thank you. Senator Klayman, any questions?
No questions.
Thank you. We're going to open public testimony. Anybody in the room wishing to comment, testify? Seeing none. There is no one online. We have closed public testimony. Thank you, Mr. Wilson, for bringing yourself forward, and have a great day. Thank you. Next, we're going to
go. Thank you very much.
Next, we're going to Mr. Robert Doyle, RCA, Regulatory Commission of Alaska. Mr. Doyle, Could you put your...
My name is Robert Doyle, and I'm been asked to serve on the RCA as a commissioner along with staff and four other commissioners. I'll work to plan and enact regulations that effectively and efficiently carry out the public's interest in a timely manner. Under AS 4205, we're authorized to do all things necessary to make a required just and fair and reasonable rate for public utilities. We take a look at the utilities for justness, fairness, and reasonableness by evaluating the public utilities revenue requirements. The revenue requirement is what's proposed for their annual earnings. It will cover their utilities' legitimate costs and expenses plus annual depreciation and a fair return on their investment. After moving to Alaska in 1968 with my family, graduated from East Anchorage High School, and went to University of Oregon, came back to Alaska, raised my family, served 31 years in public schools, the last five of which were in the Mattsu School District as the chief school administrator and superintendent. After that, for the last 15 years, I enjoyed some retirement in the state of Alaska and worked on the board of directors with being elected to the cooperative for two different terms. I actually served as a secretary treasurer, and in the last couple of years, 12 that I served on MEAs was as the chairperson and the president of the board. My goal serving for the RCA would be to make sure that the statewide electrical grid, as well as those that are not on our grid, folks out in the villages, that everybody has energy sources that are reliable, affordable, and safe. One of the things that I believe really strongly in is tight pools and an electrical reliability organization, which under SB 123 a few years back was approved, and the RCA just recently in the last 8 months while I've been on the RCA, we actually got the ERO approved with the first initial budget, and hopefully soon they'll be working to make sure that our grids are affordable, reliable, and safe. In particular, one of the things I'm very proud of in my time with Matanoosuc Electric Association was integrating through the independent power producers, the folks bringing in the first megawatt of solar power up at Willow, and then we've added another 9 megawatts that's going to be out at Point McKenzie. And so right now, the Matanoosuc Electric Association is running just below I think it's about 27% renewable power. But the big thing about the ERO is that it's going to work real hard to make sure that all sources of power, all the independent power producers have access to the grid, and that with avoidable costs that they can avoid and get paid to bring in renewable energy into the systems. So anyway, some of the priorities that I would have, the top two or three priorities that I would have is energy security for all, and that includes out in the villages. And I also believe that we need to work as hard as we can, because the ratepayers not only pay for the RCA through the utilities, they also pay for the litigation and rates. They also pay for the longer timelines in RCA decision-making. And so a couple of my goals there would be to try and shorten our timeline, get things out quicker, work with the parties on stipulations, try and reduce litigation costs and expenses, which are all going to be paid by the ratepayers, thereby hopefully reducing our costs for energy. Anyway, I've accepted this opportunity for community service. I came out of retirement to do so. Thank you for your consideration, and I am ready to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you for that succinct comments and openings. I have no questions looking at the committee. I believe we have one in the room. Senator Kawasaki.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Doyle, for being online. Just a really quick question first. Are you still serving on the Mattsu Electric Association board?
Through the chair. No, I'm not. I resigned. That would have been a conflict of interest. And the position that any of the dockets that would involve MEA in the past 8 months, I have not participated in have been recusing myself when it's appropriate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do have another question. We don't have a resume of yours, but we do have the filing that came through the boards and commissions mentioning both a bachelor's degree in 76 and a master's degree. For the qualifications for a member of the regulatory commission, you have to have either be a board, a member of good standing in the Alaska Bar Association, or have a degree with a major in engineering, finance, economics, accounting, business administration, or public administration. Is one of those degrees that you have one of those?
Yeah, my master's degree from the University of Alaska Anchorage is in public school administration. And so that's what I served at for a number of years. I've worked basically as a human resource director for the school district. I've also worked as the assistant superintendent of finance. I was in charge of all utilities, operations, and maintenance, as well as anything on the business side of the house before I became superintendent for my last 5 years.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Doyle.
Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Doyle, for coming before us today. So there are a number of folks, primarily in Anchorage, but not just in Anchorage, that would like to see the Eklutna River restored, including the native village of Eklutna and Eklutna Incorporated. And I was wondering if you had any familiarity with that issue while you were the board president of MEA, the MEA Association, and if you anticipate there be any complications potentially before the RCA if an effort to restore that river goes forward, because that would, of course, require some reduction in the amount of money, the amount of water that flows through the pipe to the hydropower facility on the other side of the mountain.
Through the chair, yes, I am familiar with that, and it's basically a required federal study, and all the parties that I know, they're all involved in it, and it's not just MEA. I believe Anchorage Water utility gets water from Eklutna, and I believe all the parties have a time frame, and I believe, if I could be wrong, but I believe within the next 2 years, I think they're supposed to complete a comprehensive study that's completely outlined and described in the federal process, and that, as far as I know, all of the parties are participating in good faith to get that issue resolved to the best outcome for all the parties.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
That Senator Wilikowski, do you have questions?
No question.
Thank you. Senator Klayman?
I do have a question. One of the topics that's come up in some of our other hearings involves the Electric Reliability Organization and how long that's been before the RCA, which I think has slowed the process that can actually get up and running. And I'm just wondering if you have any thoughts in terms of how to accelerate the process with the RCA so that organizations like that are actually critical to improving our electrical infrastructure and how different utilities work together, how that can go faster than it's gone.
Through the chair, I think that's a great question. One of the things that happened after SB 123 was, and I wasn't on the RC at that time, was an extensive regulation docket, and I believe the regulations exceed about 100 pages. One of the things I think we can do is to take a look at regulations, take a look at our timelines, and take a look at our processes and make sure they're streamlined, because I agree with you completely that we need to have a process that actually is robust. We get all of the information out, all the pros and cons on different alternatives, but in the end of the day, hopefully we can do that in a time frame that keeps the power on and the lights on and the heat on for all the residents of South Central. I'm a big supporter of the ERO. I'm a huge supporter of a tight pool where whoever can generate the power at the cheapest and meet their debt covenants, whether it's from Homer all the way to Fairbanks, those are the folks that we should be having them produce the power and getting it out to the ratepayers. I just think we have to take a look at those timelines. I think we need to. We know that the work will always expand to the time allowed. So I'm kind of a big believer in t- tightening up those time frames and reducing our litigation costs, trying to reduce the motion practice that's going on, and it'll take some time to work through it because there's history and precedent, but I agree that we need to do a better job and get it out fast. One of the things we did do was approve an early budget with a stipulation from the parties to get them off and running this summer, and kind of kick loose into the future some of the rules and some of the future budgets so that we can get all the discovery done, but that doesn't hold up them getting on with hiring their CEO and getting on to their business at hand.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just know there were a lot of concerns. I think we've heard it in this committee with respect to the Cookeland gas issue, and that getting the ERO up and running sooner would help get more alternatives working in Alaska. So I not a follow-up question, just a comment about how important to try to pick up the pace on that particular approval. Thank you.
Well, thank you for that question and comment, Senator Clayman. Seeing no further comments or questions from committee members, we're going to open public testimony. Anyone in the room wishing to testify on Mr. Robert Doyle, appointee to the Regulatory Commission of Alaska? Seeing none, there is no one online wishing to testify. Public testimony is now closed on Mr. Robert Doyle. Okay, Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Senate Resources Committee has reviewed the qualifications of the governor's appointees and recommends that the following names be forwarded to a joint session for consideration. Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources, John Boyle. Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, Brett Huber and Greg Wilson. Regulatory Commission of Alaska, Robert Doyle. This does not reflect an intent of any of the members to vote for or against these individuals during any further sessions for the purpose of confirmation.
Thank you. And the names will be forwarded to the joint session. Please be sure to sign the confirmation committee report. Thanks to you all. Before we take a brief at ease and pass the gavel, Senator Kawasaki, I just have a question for you. Is March 20th any kind of a special day in your life? Okay. Just checking. Okay. Thank you. We'll take a brief at ease.
Committee is back on the record. The next order of business today is the first hearing for Senate Joint Resolution Number 8. And I have three people who are invited testimony online. So I'm going to ask Julia O'Connor to be extremely brief in introducing this resolution so that we can get to the three invited testifiers who have been waiting online. Ms. O'Connor.
For the record, Julia O'Connor, staff to Senator Giesel, the proposed rules by the National Park Service would limit certain hunting practices and close all predator hunts in national preserves. The ruling is contrary to ANILCA, Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act, and the Alaska Statehood Act, and should be withdrawn. The proposed rule will not ban any sort of sport hunting practices such as bear baiting, bear denning, and hunting swimming caribou, but will only close those hunts to non-federally qualified hunters. Even if those non-federally qualified hunters have cultural ties to those methods and means. The proposed rule nullifies wildlife management and will cause a cascade of effects that will ultimately threaten food security in communities that rely on wildlife national preserves for subsistence. All Alaskan hunting methods are approved by the Alaska Board of Game and require a robust public process with a significant input from biologists, residents, and other stakeholders. The Board of Game must consider customary traditional harvests and hunting practices crucial to continuing Alaska's cultural heritage. The ruling overreaches Alaska's public process by closing customary and traditional Alaskan harvests. Alaska has successfully managed wildlife on both state and federal lands since the United States Department of the Interior transferred to the State Management Authority in 1959. The proposed ruling by the National Park Service counters the work of the Alaska Statehood Act. Senate Joint Resolution 8 urges the National Park Service to withdraw the proposed rule and work collaboratively with Alaska to find a solution that is based on sound science and to recognize Alaska's authority to manage its wildlife populations. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. O'Connor. Committee members, this is only the first hearing of the bill. Obviously, there will be more time for questions and further discussion, but I do have three people online that I would like to respect their time and allow them to speak. The first one is Thor Stacey, Director of Government Affairs. He has, of the Alaska Professional Hunters Association, and with him is Attorney James Lister for any questions. Mr. Stacey, I open it to you for testimony. Please keep in mind there are two other folks waiting, so perhaps 5 minutes or less. Thank you. Mr. Stacey, can you hear us?
Yes, Madam Co-Chair, can you hear me?
Yes, very clearly.
Great. For the record, my name is Thor Stacey. I'm the Director of Government Affairs for the Alaska Professional Hunters Association. I'm joined in this presentation by our counsel from Birch, Horton, Bittner, and Chereau, Mr. James Lister. I'm going to break the presentation into two parts and be brief for committee time. The first part will be myself, and the second part will be a brief litigation outlined by Mr. Lister. First, I am a lobbyist, a registered lobbyist for the APHA. I do represent other clients, but I have some subject matter expertise on wildlife matters that I feel appropriate to testify in front of you today, so I appreciate your patience. First, the APHA supports the resolution in front of you. We'd like to comment that superficially, this issue is about specific methods and means. The specific methods and means in question, i.e. bear baiting, are distractions from the core issue. Support for the resolution is not support for bear baiting, bear dinning, or taking of swimming caribou, nor is opposition to the resolution opposition to these methods and means. If the rule goes into effect, all of these methods and means will still be used by federally qualified users on national parks preserves. Subsequently, the resolution is about a broad preemption of wildlife, state wildlife management authority, and specific preemptions of specifically allowed for practices. The general preemption incorporated in this rule will disallow all sustainable predator hunts on National Park Service preserves in Alaska. This general preemption removes long-standing sustainable predator hunts on national preserves. Predators and prey are naturally intact in Alaska, and they, of course, interact, one eats the other, and therefore disallowing the harvest of either predator or prey nullifies wildlife management. The proposed rule will have the effect of closing state predator hunts while leaving in place all hunts for food animals, i.e. caribou, moose, deer, where they exist on those preserves. The second substantive effect is the specific preemptions, bear baiting, bear denning, and taking of swimming caribou. A lot of those are provided for under the command that the legislature have in place that the Board of Game consider and prioritize customary and traditional uses. The third substantive effect of this proposed rule is that the MPS has ignored the basic closure process as envisioned in the NILCA. The first being state consultation. This rule was proposed and forwarded without consultation with the state and development with state authorities or leaders. Second, the National Park Service has advanced this rule without engaging with its own entities, the Rural Advisory Committees, the RACs, and the Subsistence Resource Commissions, which are specific to the national parks in Alaska, Both of those entities were created by Congress and ANILCA for the specific purpose of reviewing proposals just like this. And the third issue of process is that there has not been hearings in affected areas. We will recognize that there has been tribal consultation, although we don't know to what extent and what the results of that have been. We would like to recognize that APHA has no disagreement that the MPS has narrow closure authority on its lands in Alaska as envisioned by ANILCA. So we have no disagreement that there may be times where it's appropriate for the federal side to exercise specific closure authorities. In summary, this is a big picture issue. This resolution is about supporting you, the legislature. The Board of Game has your delegated constitutional authority and is commanded to regulate within statutory sideboards you construct. They are commanded to place conservation first, manage wildlife for human use, including wildlife viewing. The state has closed large areas of Alaska to only allow for wildlife viewing, as an example. Those are Board of Game actions. And the Board of Game must prioritize subsistence use, and they are commanded to consider and promote customary and traditional uses as you have prescribed. This resolution is really support for you, the legislature, in a sphere that we have always understood the state to have primacy. This is opposed to other ideas or options that are in the legislature where the state is looking to assert more authority in spheres that may be allowed by federal law, the example being the 404 primacy. This is not an issue or effort to have the state overreach its wildlife authorities. This resolution is support for the status quo against federal overreach. With that, Madam Chair and Co-Chairs, I'm going to shift to Jim Lister. Jim, if you can hear me, would you take the hand off?
Mr. Lister, are you available?
Yeah, it's Jim Lister. I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, thank you. So APH is outside attorney. I'll just give a quick report on what is the rule that is currently in effect a National Park Service, the rule that this proposed rule would replace, and the rule that Senate Joint Resolution Number 8 urges the NPS to keep in place as opposed to replacing. In June 2020, NPS adopted a rule that restored state management over hunting on Alaska National Preserves. The rule canceled some prior preemptions from 2015, allows the State Board of Game to determine the hunting rules, including the rules governing hunts for animals that are predators. And that's the rule that APHA thinks should stay in place. But in January of this year, January 2023, NPS proposed to issue a new rule that would go back to 2015 and would take away the 2020 rule and would preempt the various state Board of Game allowed hunting methods. So the litigation report I have is that the June 2020 rule that's now in effect has, for now, survived litigation challenges, which is another reason why the joint resolution makes sense and why NPS should keep the rule. After NPS adopted this rule restoring state management in June 2020, Alaska Wildlands Alliance sued to overturn the rule. The rule went to litigation and a decision before U.S. District Judge Gleason in September. APHA and its partner, Sportsman's Alliance, along with the State Attorney General's Office and Safari Club, defended the rule. NPS did not participate, and this defense was more successful than not. Judge Gleason left the June 2020 rule in place. She declined to vacate it. She remanded it without vacatur so NPS could consider a number of issues, none of which are barriers to NPS doing what Senate Joint Resolution Number 8 would ask, which is to keep the June 2020 rule in place. So that the case was remanded without vacatur to NPS, and all parties, all sides, including Alaska Wildlands Alliance, have appealed, and those appeals are currently stayed while NPS decides what to do on its proposed rule, and it has a March 27th comment deadline. So that's my report. I hope it's helpful background, and happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Linnell. Are there any questions? Seeing none, though there could be some later, we're just kind of hearing the bill for the first time. Karen Linnell is online. She's the executive director of OTNA's Intertribal Resource Commission. Ms. Linnell, are you available to give us some comments?
Yes, ma'am.
Welcome.
For the record, my name is Karen Linnell. I'm the executive director for OTNA Intertribal Resource Commission. I hope to speak a little bit to what ATRIC put in. We believe that this proposed rule bypasses ANILCA and what has been set up there. In addition to going forward and bypassing the RACs and the Subsistence Resource Commission, we believe the intent of the ANILCA Section 101B talks about to protect the resources related to subsistence needs, to protect and preserve historic and archaeological sites, rivers, and lands, to preserve wilderness value and related recreational opportunities, including but not limited to hiking, canoeing, fishing, and sport hunting. The one thing that's really different throughout with the Park Service and the rest of the state of Alaska and what we believe sport hunters to be, sport hunters under the National Park Service is anybody that doesn't live within a residence zone. I moved 50 miles from Chistochina to Glen Allen and now am considered a sport hunter regarding the Shoshana caribou herd, although I am still federally qualified. I'm not specifically qualified for that caribou herd. We have many tribal members that have had to move to other locations for work or medical, but like to come home to hunt. And this, and in the preserve and stuff, and that, you know, they're able to do that under state regulations. This bypasses that and prevents them from doing it. The other thing that this proposed rule is take things and traditional practices that have been done for centuries, even thousands of years, as the Otna people have been occupying Wrangell St. Elias and Denali National Park for over 10,000 years, our ability to harvest those animals. And when I look at this, it's not taking into consideration the long-standing customary and traditional uses of various tribes across the state. The other thing is it's not based on science or documented cases of abuse, and that friends and relatives can't come home to participate. And then these methods and means have been going on for centuries. The taking of caribou while swimming is not a practice of Copper River or Otna Athabascan, but it is a practice in Northwest Arctic. The denning that they're trying to address is done in a very specific location. And the Board of Game rules or regulations are only for those specific locations, not statewide. So they're addressing things in a statewide manner and having an effect on folks that weren't initially a part of this. And just as a personal note, I served on the Wrangell St. Elias SRC for many years and actually was chair of the SRC, Wrangell St. Elias Subsistence Resource Commission, for several years. And the proposed rule that introduced this prohibition that later needed to be repealed under President Trump's administration was originally requested by Wrangell St. Elias to allow for the collection of shed antlers, and it took us a long time, several years, to be able to get the Park Service to put that forward. And while they were putting it forward, they added information on bear baiting. And that's what got repealed. And now, again, they're going back through and adding additional things, such as trapping. Mr. Stacy mentioned a tribal consultation. I can tell you what happened. I was invited by one of our tribes to listen in because they weren't sure what was being asked of them. And when we asked for the comments or to be able to read the questions, because it was a, quote, informal survey, they didn't have anything in writing. And I went to a Denali SRC meeting to give a report from ATRIC last fall. Again, nothing in writing, but they were asking the SRC for their opinion on things. They had nothing to read and nothing to digest. And they were going to get support for it because they were calling them sports hunters, but they weren't. I had to remind them that sport hunters can be their friends and relatives from Alaska, not the trophy hunters that the rest of us consider sport hunters. And so they actually paused and stopped and asked for additional information. The same with the Wrangell St. Elias SRC. As a personal note, as a former Board of Game member, I submitted my personal testimony or comments to this as well. I was serving on the board from 2016 to 2019, and I got to listen to a lot of testimonies on proposals before the board, and the one that I remember most was a tribal citizen from Huslia on the Koyukuk River, and he spoke about a proposal before the board to eliminate his way of harvesting. And he spoke about those traditional uses of those that were not to talk about, and how he had to speak of these things going against his tribal law so that the Board of Game could understand. He did this at the risk of harm to his family by going against tribal law. He spoke of their traditional practices, how the knowledge is passed from generation to generation, that they do most of their hunting in September to October, not when they're having cubs in January and February. He said, we have respect of the animal and what is taboo, or what they call hoklani. He said, we don't take little ones, and treating them with disrespect can have a direct effect on their family. And then he spoke about how they selected them and by looking at their scat and looking for berries in them, because when they know that there's berries in there and they wait a couple weeks, that the fat will change from brown or yellow to white, and then it will be good to eat. He used, he spoke of these things so that the board would understand. And there's the Board of Game kept that specific area for his method of collection in harvest. This is not a statewide rule. It's specific to very small location. The same with the swimming caribou. It's specific to the Northwest Arctic, where they still practice that. These rules that they put forward are based on not based on biological information, but on emotion and perception from Washington, D.C. And the other thing is that it's a blanket proposal that goes across the entire state. You would never treat arches, treat the animals at Yellowstone or Glacier National Park the same way that you do arches. We have so many different ecoregions in Alaska, and for them to think that, you know, you can just do a blanket and this is, and we get this at the Board of Game, because I'm actually traveling right now to the Board of Game in Soldotna. When we talk about the animals and things, and you got to know them. And our elder says you have to walk this land to know it. And so those local advisory committees, the local regional advisory committees are so important to the management of this and the public input process for this before they put a proposed rule forward is so important to knowing what's going on the ground. And I do wish and hope that you support this proposal or this resolution and move it forward and ask that this rule be removed. They need to go back to individual and not statewide. Yeah, I'll just stop there. I'm starting to mumble and repeat myself.
Thank you so much, Ms. Linnell, for your testimony. Really meaningful information that you shared with us. Thank you very much. Committee members, I know some of you have to go, but John Sturgeon has been waiting quite some time and is ready to testify. So I'm going to ask him to give testimony right now. Mr. Sturgeon, welcome to the committee, and we look forward to hearing from you.
Madam Chair, thank you. I'm going to abbreviate my testimony quite a bit. I'll just refer to other people that have testified, so I'm not going to be long. First of all, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to testify. For the record, my name is John Sturgeon, and today I'm representing the Safari Club Alaska chapter. We have about 800 members here in Alaska, and our mission statement is SCI, First for Hunters, and our goal here in Alaska is to preserve and improve our hunting heritage. We support Senate Joint Resolution Number 8, but we have several concerns on the proposed 2023 National Parks and Reserves Rule that I'd like to address. First, I'll just say I would agree with the Alaska Professional Hunters Association and analysis of the 2015, 2020, and 23 rules, and they gave a great explanation, so I had some on that. Skip that. I just want you to know that I agree with what they say. The other one is that which you also covered is that the federal government is illegally assuming an authority for the state of Alaska that was granted at statehood and repeated again in ANILCA, and they also did a good job explaining why that's not right and what it all means. So I'll skip that part too. The only thing that I have new is there are some very good reasons why there's a single entity that manages wildlife in every single state. That reason is wildlife don't know political boundaries. Just last Friday, I heard a presentation by Alaska Department of Fish and Game at the Board of Game. They showed a map that tracked the GPS collared lynx. That lynx traveled from the Kenai Peninsula to Whitehorse and started back again on lynx. They also had a GPS collared wolf that went from the Kenai all the way to the North Slope. Then you have animals like caribou that often travel hundreds of miles each year across many political boundaries, state land, private land, BLM land, refuges, and preserves. And the caribou, they don't know they're crossing political boundaries. And you can't manage wildlife with a patchwork of different seasons, bag limits, hoarding restrictions, wanton waste standards, etc. That's why you have one entity in each state, which is the state of Alaska, or the state entity, and we have the Alaska Department of Fish and Game that manages that wildlife. So even if they move from one political boundary to another, they are still being managed on a scientific and perpetual basis. So I think that's a point that has been made that's pretty important. There's a reason that the state's got authority to manage wildlife across all political boundaries in other states. In summary, we ask you to stand up for Alaska's right to manage its wildlife, stand up for Alaska to manage its wildlife the same as all the other states without federal government interference, and stand up for Alaska's wildlife to manage on science, facts, and not politics. This last rule, like all three rules, is more based on politics rather than science. And stand up for the rule of law, and make the laws accountable to the
Congress passes, like a congressional review act, mean something to federal agencies. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I hope that wasn't too long. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Sturgeon. Thank you for holding on. We've had a long meeting, and I appreciate your testimony very much. Committee members, we will have this bill back. We're going to discuss it at much more length. But right now, let's conclude the meeting. The next meeting will be Wednesday, March 22nd at 3:30. On the agenda is Senate Bill 90, Extend the Alaska Minerals Commission. We will also be hearing Senate Bill 49, Carbon Storage, by the governor with invited testimony at that time, and a presentation from Commissioner Designee John Boyle on an update from CIRA Week. So right now, we will stand adjourned. Let the record reflect. The time is 5:11 p.m.